I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
3 employees and 2 work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humour. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Today's episode is sponsored by my good friends at Timeline. Timeline is now offering the world's first ever longevity gummies powered by MitoPure. You've heard me talk about the importance of cellular health and our mitochondria, which is why I have Timeline as my favorite and most trusted sponsor. These are the only clinically proven urolithin A gummies for strength and healthy aging. We may be living longer lifespans, but are we truly living better lives? What if the key is not just adding years to your life, but life to your years? This all starts at the cellular level. As we age, our mitochondrial health starts to decline, and one of the keys to living longer and healthier is keeping our mitochondria healthy and strong, and MitoPure targets this for us. Take control of your health now and live the life that you not only desire, but you also deserve. As a gift to all my listeners, you can save 20% off today by going to timeline.com/Dylan to get started. That's timeline.com/Dylan. I assure you, your cells will thank you. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Dylan Jamelli podcast. I am live on set for the very first time in my new home here in Arizona. We've got a great studio that we're at on location. And I have my very first guest is extra, extra special to me today. I have been talking with this man for over a month now, gotten really close with him. We've had some really in-depth discussions that we probably should have saved for the podcast, but it's going to really add to what we've got to talk about today. I can't do this man enough justice. I'm going to try to hit the things that he's done, but we're going to get into all of your background because there's no way I'm going to hit it all. No way. Anyway, he has done his work with My Red Light, and that is what I have used and been a part of, and that's what really kind of drew me to you first, and that's his red light therapy we're going to talk a ton about. He's an author. He does so many different types of work that helps people, looks at diseases to help people. He inspires people. He's done docuseries, I believe 20, is that correct?
Yeah.
20 that you've gotten awards for. You've done investigative journalism. I mean, the list goes on and on and on, and we're going to get into all of that and more. I'm just proud to call you my friend and somebody that I've gotten close to. So everybody, Jonathan Otto.
Thank you so much, Dylan. I appreciate you, bro. That's really kind of you, truly, and the feeling is mutual, and I think you really know that. People that are following your work know how special you are, truly, and how fortunate they are. Your insights are profound, and I think this is going to be a really fun conversation.
I agree. I mean, we've had a million of them, but this is going to be awesome. I know I said I've been talking to you for a while, but to meet you in person, it's definitely even cooler, and the fact that you took the time to fly in here to see me, it was important that you were my first guest live here, and I'm excited, bro. And so I know that you have another flight to get out to, and so I want to take advantage of all this time. So I rattled off a bunch of things that you do, all right? That's a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't know a lot of people that do that many things. My wife has given me a hard time because I take on so many things, and seems like we're very identical.
Yeah,
we do. First, let me just kick back and start with your background.
Yeah.
Like, how, kind of, you don't have to go into your whole childhood or anything, but how you grew up, what inspired you to take the route that you've gone? Because you're doing so many different things, but that they have a real cause behind it. And I've noticed that with you, that there's a real meaning behind it. A lot of people are money driven or fame driven. You don't come across as any of that.
Well, firstly, thanks for just seeing that. And hopefully it's at least remotely true, right? I really want to be somebody that leaves an impact and that has an impact. I think that, you know, you think about suffering and you think about how much pain that people go through, and you put that up against fame or money, and you see somebody say goodbye to their lifelong, you know, wife or husband way too early, or you see somebody lose their child to chronic disease or just have their life ruined at an early age, or a child that can't speak because they're autistic. And then you just think, okay, well, look, you know, me having this many cars or this type of car or this type of house, the motivation then becomes so weird and there's so much meaning and purpose. And I believe that's just, that's where the happiness is found. So I started to feel that at a really young age, which I'm just really grateful for that. I was under the age of 10. I think I was 7. And my mom had seen me just weeping. I was crying because I'd seen this commercial. It was World Vision. I ended up becoming an ambassador for them by age 17. And it was children in famine. And so I'd never seen this kind of thing before. Who would? You live in a normal suburban Australian home.
You're right.
And yeah, there's the Australian accent. And then you see children, they've got different skin color, but they look like me still. And then they've got these, they're just skin and bone.
I am.
And it wrecked me. And I felt like if I didn't do anything about it, that it would, I'd just be like walking away from some injustice. And I felt like I had to do something. My mom was super smart. And like, so instead of, you know, she saw me crying, instead of just telling me like, it's okay, don't worry about it. And the next thing that she did, which was really smart, when I said, we need to sponsor a child, cause that's what the voice said. It said, a child doesn't have to live like this. You can save this child. You can help them by sponsoring a child. So I knew in my mind that I could sponsor a child and I could help this situation. But she said, well, you need to learn how to make money. Hence why and I did. And so we sponsored 2 children for the next 15 years. It was delivering newspapers. So then I ended up like thinking, okay, well, how do I gain skills to make a difference? And so I became an ambassador at age 17. So as around that time, I was awarded Young Citizen of the Year and International Ambassador of the Year by the Australian government, because I didn't even apply for those things. They were just things that like others that were seeing what I was up to. My mission was very clear. It was like, okay, let's try to solve these big problems. At the time, it was HIV, AIDS, and things like that. I think about it a little differently now, but as a bit of a cliffhanger. But, you know, human trafficking, human starvation. But then I got degrees with those backgrounds for journalism. And so that was the reason. And so then it was to uncover these issues. And that was this mysterious linchpin together with, okay, what if I went deep into the medical arena? Because my health was wrecked. And I had a lot of chronic conditions. I had Lyme disease, cytomegalovirus, Epstein-Barr, Ross River fever, glandular fever, chronic boils, chronic like Lyme disease, chronic nausea. Chronic fatigue syndrome. That was the worst. That was the worst, because you just got no energy to do anything and just feel sad all the time because your body has no energy. But I struggled a lot. So that's where I kind of started to gain all these clues. And then like you look back, and so I got a couple of degrees and they pushed me more into that journalism side of things. But then I ended up in as a producer for a documentary series called The Truth About Cancer. And so I'd been doing a lot of my own health research. Do you know the name Barbara O'Neill? Some of the audience are going to know who she is, but she was the famous Australian naturopath that was kind of exiled from the country. And she's one of the most sought after naturopaths in the world. But she was a naturopath to me, mm-hmm. When I was in Australia. So I started to get all these really big clues into very niche fringe information that were very helpful. And then I went into about close to 12 years ago into this documentary, The Truth About Cancer, producing for them and traveling around the world and understanding with, you know, from hundreds of doctors what was going on. And then come full circle, like I actually just came back from Tijuana, but like whether it's places like the Hope for Cancer Center or other clinics, like well-known clinics around the world, now asked me to come and consult with their doctors, teach them various things that I've discovered to help them in their treatment of their patients based on results that we're finding. Hence why, you know, our conversation in the unique condition that you were battling with, and why I believe that arguably, you know, it's going to be, and you'll be able to voice this as time goes on, that it's so effective and it's going to work completely. But we'll see, right? But I've seen that so many times, but that's the reason why I get sought after in that way. So yeah.
That's amazing, man. I remember those commercials when I was a kid, and it's kind of like, you don't want to see you can't make that reality out, because it's like, whoa, it's scary and it freaks you out. I still remember too seeing that and feeling a certain way. And I think that's a testament just to kind of like the interpersonal and what you have. And I like the things that you said. But it's funny because, well, it's not funny, but it's common that every single person that I talk to, including myself, that is really into the health field, it tends to be because we had our issues that we had to deal with, or somebody we loved had the issues. And that's what kind of inspires, I'm not saying everybody, but most people that are super passionate, that do a lot, it seems like it's like something triggered it and caused it within.
Yeah.
You know, and so it makes you want to find the problem and help others you know, to prevent them from doing it. It's not just about yourself, it's about other people. And I think that's kind of where what you're doing now comes in, is you're all about others. I've noticed that every conversation we have, you're talking about helping somebody and then you're trying to get me involved in it because I want to be involved in it. And then we're thinking about how we can help people together. And that was the point of doing this with you and making it a live show, because it'll be more impactful. I know your background, but I want to talk about the red light, because we had a lot to get into about it. Red lights are a dime a dozen.
Mm-hmm.
They are. You know it and I know it. There's a lot of companies that are doing some really tricky marketing. I'm not going to name names, big names that I think don't have the right intentions or don't have the right technology, don't have the right understanding. First, I want to just focus on the brand. What does it represent? What is different about your brand? And then we'll talk about the science behind it. But I want to talk specifically about the brand and what makes it stand out, what makes it different.
Wow, that's beautiful, man. Well, Red Life is so cool to get asked a question like that. Yeah, you're good, man. Red Life is about transformation, right? But everyone would say something so basic like that. But it, you think about, if it was just to kind of run with something that may be popular but doesn't necessarily work. So it just gets kind of, that's how it's developed, and it doesn't have any of these things in mind. But what if it was to take all the studies that exist and to find in all the clinically proven wavelengths that are the most effective for all different conditions, and then to, you know, put all that in one device. And then the whole point in doing these types of things are stacking the highest irradiance, using the right chip so that you have the right amount of power delivered into the cells, and having a dual component. So obviously this is technical. The whole point is because I want this to work so well with somebody. And then this whole thing of how, like, health is often only accessible to the ultra wealthy. And there's something so wrong about that. And there are times when you see somebody like Steve Jobs, who had every resource at his fingertips, one of the world's wealthiest men, but it's still, like, he still couldn't get the treatments that he needed. And sometimes, you know, sometimes the answers are simple. And I think it's just awesome when all people can access health. So Red Life also stands for that. And that's the reason why we would make something that we could have charged 10 times the price for available, you know, whatever that difference is. But like, you're looking at how you can make sure that people can get their hands on that versus to do that in a way that made it inaccessible to the people that needed it the most. That's what it stands for.
I love that. And I always ask and care about what brand representation is. And I care about the person, how they answer that question and how they look when they're answering it, how generic or fluff it may sound, or how passionate behind it is. If you don't have that type of reason to resonate with people and explain it, I cannot take you serious that you actually care, or that there's a purpose behind it. So I already know that there was with you, but I wanted the people watching to see so that they could understand where you were coming from. So when we're talking about red light in general, I think first it's kind of fallen into the biohacking sphere. Do you feel like this is some sort of biohack, or this is just some sort of should be known science that people practice and use? And look, you and I both know, I would put this under something you would learn from a naturopathic doctor, right? You're not going to go to a doctor, generally a GP or anybody in that kind of realm that's going to go, oh, go get on a red light.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a skin condition, or you've got cancer, and I don't want to get into claims. We'll talk about things you've noticed. You got psoriasis, whatever, because these are things that we've seen people with, you know, with red light and get help with. And we'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
But what made you stumble upon red light? Because you're doing all these other things.
Yeah.
You're doing investigative work. You're doing docuseries. You're investing into companies. You're doing X, Y, and Z. How'd you find red light?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I remember doing a lot of research on the clinics were getting the best success. And so they were certainly ahead, but they were late to the party. We were all late to the party in the sense that you look at when the Nobel Prize was won. It was in 1903 for light therapy, reversing disease. Niels Ryberg Finsen, he won the Nobel Prize in 1903 for light therapy reversing lupus vulgaris. So
really,
how cool is that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, so it was so prolific. And then somebody that some people know in the health movement in early, like, 1900s, it was John Harvey Kellogg, mixed character, Kellogg's Cornflakes, that was his brother, which is not a health food company anymore. It kind of was, but he then advanced that work of Vincent, and they would, you know, make these, they were called sanitariums. They would use these light therapy devices in there, in the centers. They would use, they'd use like halogen or incandescent bulbs, and they would use this, and then they would get them to eat the plants that would help activate the light. So they knew this, like, back then,
right?
So, but the thing that switched me onto it was reading all the studies, stumbling upon some of that. It was going into some of these clinics back, you know, a good 15 years ago, and then, and more so 11, 12 years ago, and then seeing all these cancer studies and seeing the individuals that were having great success and putting cancer in remission, and seeing that this was something in common, this photobiomodulation.
Mm-hmm.
And then I could see that these clinics also were trying to find ways to get the most advanced technology. And some of them had kind of given up on it in a way because they couldn't get the amount of power delivered, even though they knew it was going to be good, but they just couldn't get the power delivery. And so wanted to be part of that.
That's amazing. I love that, man. So, okay, you find the red light, then you decide, okay, I'm going to start my own company, mm-hmm. correct? How difficult was that to do? Because I'm assuming that you have a lot of science behind the starting of that company that you need to look into. How am I going to develop the proper red light? How is it going to stand out better? How difficult of a process is this to actually do?
Yeah, well,
do it right.
Yeah, oh no, it is, man. And you definitely, you know, advises having the right people, being able to soundboard your ideas, or having good researchers, having your team be able to just like bury themselves in studies and present that to you. So you've got a team, you know, mm-hmm. I've got about 50 people in the company. And so we've just been able to then just tackle different areas. And we've been most well known for the research. So all the documentaries that I've been releasing, and that's where if people look on our Facebook or like on the ads we're running, you'll see hundreds of millions of views against the films, which is really cool. And some videos will have like 800,000 likes underneath them and things like that. So it shows that people are responding, they're enjoying that. But we got most known for the research that we'd be releasing and publishing. So that helped the most,
right?
Because then we're naturally looking at a lot of information and data, and I had a good team around me to be able to give me information that they were finding. I'd help understand that, and then we'd work directly and with manufacturers to program our devices with the wavelengths that we were finding in the studies, and then do that run, and then try again, and then try again until we could get something that really worked the best.
So do you guys conduct your own studies? I'm sure you extrapolate from other studies too that you look at and see, but do you do your own?
Well, yes, case studies, yes, but not like peer-reviewed, not double-blinded studies, right? And what you'll find, here's what's interesting. If you look up the studies on the red light devices, that they're never specific to the device,
mm-hmm.
Which is good because it's designed to not have a conflict of interest.
Yeah.
And so then the companies that we conduct case study based studies, the ones that are, and they then give us great data. So we have that real time data. And so I can cite all the different amazing case studies that we've uncovered that we've seen directly, which are profound. The other side of that is something that it would be great to do. I think, but there's a reason why, like you're talking about sometimes like tens of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
But the cool thing is that we have all that data because of the amount of people we're reaching,
mm-hmm.
and all that data that comes back to us. That's so helpful. It's bigger than what you could ever do in confined settings.
You know, and I don't want to talk about things that I do, but I will get this constantly, this battle with supplements and things that I say I observe. And I tell people, when I'm dealing with thousands and thousands of people and I'm seeing it firsthand, I'm going to take that over data that somebody can go put out that's BS and, you know, fix however they want. Question, because I'm sure people watching are curious, what's the difference between a double blind study and a case study? What is the difference there so people understand?
Oh yeah, absolutely. One would be, I will give you an example. It's Lancet Oncology published a study, which was 413 participants on prostate cancer with red light therapy. It was called vascular targeted photobiomodulation or photodynamic therapy and things. So lots of words here, sorry guys. And so they put two different groups, and one take the red light and conventional treatment, the other group take the conventional treatment without the red light.
Okay.
And the reason why that we would use the word blinded would be that now in this case, if it's a red light device, I now have to give you a fake light. And so in this case, the outcome was that 13.5% of the people in the control group, the fake light group, got 13.5% got into remission in the 2-year period. In the group that took the red light therapy, 49% went into remission.
Wow.
It's pretty cool.
That's staggering.
400% increase, four times the greater likelihood of becoming cancer-free.
Wow. That's amazing. And so case study then is just like what you observe. They're reporting things to you or what you see or hear. I mean, there's no real structure. It's just differentiation from person to person.
Exactly. Which could be very accurately detailed. And so those reports then are scientific as well.
Yeah.
and they stand in that fashion. And so that data is then very helpful. And then it also can be very statistically relevant mm-hmm. in that it can be observed in similar scenarios over prolonged periods of time, et cetera. But yeah, and then it also gives you the, okay, this has been done as achieved. And it also gives insight to go into doing these other studies. But again, there are studies that don't exist yet and that people need to make themselves the study. Like if I could tell you, like I'll give you an example. Red light therapy for thyroid disease is amazing. There's a chronic autoimmune thyroiditis clinical study, and there was 15 participants. Of that, the group that took the light therapy were actually just, I'm not sure if this one was double blind or not, but I do know this fact about it, that they had 10 sessions over 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. 47% of them at a 9-month follow-up didn't need levothyroxine, Synthroid anymore at all. Their thyroid was producing it naturally, the LT4, mm-hmm. and then everyone had a reduced rate of intake, and that was only 5 weeks, and they were off it now for almost an entire 8 months.
It's wild, man.
Now, so then that's with chronic autoimmune thyroiditis, which most of these are going to be hypo underactive thyroid.
Mm.
But now if you look into research, Google, and you say, what about Graves' disease? And they'll say, oh, we don't really have any data on this, but I could tell you data that I've seen. Mm. I could tell you, Shannon, I'll give you names of people that I've witnessed using our products, where she and her friend Elizabeth are thinking like, what do we do? She's bedridden because of Graves' disease, and she was formerly an athlete, and then now she can't hardly walk, and her markers are super bad, and her doctors say give up any dream of ever competing again in a marathon.
Right.
And then her friend Elizabeth says, you know what Jonathan would say? You know, he would just say to get in front of that red light and just get your body in front of it, get your thyroid in front of it. And this was over all her organs, so brain to groin area, and then naturally her thyroid is against it. And like, just do it every day. Let's do it for half an hour, an hour. Let's get close to it. And they're probably about 3 inches away. That's typically what I'm saying. So in 2.5 weeks, she goes and competes in the Boston Marathon.
Really?
True story.
Wow. What's Graves' disease for people that know?
Hyperactive thyroid. So the thyroid is overactive.
Mm-hmm.
And so then some of the symptoms would be bulging eyes and then weight loss instead of weight gain.
Okay.
Yeah. And the thyroid is just very sensitive. And so it's going to get messed up and then not be able to produce the hormones properly, and then any imbalance would go one way or the other, and then the people with hypo just like doesn't matter what they do, they can't lose weight. The people with hypo, they're losing too much weight, and then every other problem associated with it. But I've even heard from doctors that they, whenever generalization, but they see schizophrenic patients, but if they fix their thyroid, that they turn that around to
really?
It's pretty real.
Yeah, thyroid issue, that's a whole nother topic, but that they're very problematic. I've took a deeper dive into that too, and to know that that's helpful by a red light is amazing amongst the other things. We got a little bit of background on a little bit of why you found it, a little bit of science there. Let's talk about some of the bad actors and get that out of the way.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't want to dig too deep into that. I don't want to bring up names of any kind whatsoever, but I do want to talk about what things people need to look for to keep themselves safe and protected from buying a BS red light. What are some things to look for marketing wise and then maybe structurally wise that would be a clear indicator of, okay, I should stay away from this? Because I mean, you believe in yours. I know I believe in yours, but you also don't want to act like it's the only good one out there. But there's far more bad ones than good ones, just like with supplements, just like with a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Protect people.
Yes. Yeah. No, that's awesome, man. I think that, and I love what you're saying. Like, I want there to be lots of great companies.
Yeah.
Right? Because no one company can serve the whole world. So they don't, and if they really care about putting an end to disease in the world, then they should celebrate other companies. And we should all compete with each other in a good way to make our products better and more competitive in their pricing and all kinds of things. All really good. And so there are good companies and there are bad companies. And then maybe they are bad just because they don't know. And maybe they're bad because they just don't care. And I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm me to judge. And then there's this middle zone where even if it was a bad company, it's possible you'd still get results. Which is cool. But I said possible. I didn't say that it definitely would be. And I'm not even saying that it's unlikely. I don't think it's unlikely. I don't think it is likely. I don't know. But it's very possible. Because you're looking for the right wavelengths and you're looking for irradiance. Okay, so an irradiance is the amount of power delivered. Or it's the amount of milliwatts, typically, it depends how you measure it, but milliwatts delivered per centimeter squared. If you have the right amount delivered, then you can have the intensity that you need in your body so that your body can use that for all the purposes related largely to do with mitochondrial function, but not exclusively. and heavily to do with oxygen, how the body produces oxygen, goes through critical phases of cellular respiration, which involve cytochrome C oxidase and nitric oxide signaling. So lots of cool nerdy things there.
I love it.
Yeah. Cells breathe, and that's crazy to think about that.
Mm-hmm.
And that what you do with light is you're shooting straight into the cells and helping them to breathe.
Yes.
Cool is that?
It's amazing.
And then you'd say, okay, well, breathing, that sounds interesting, like a breathe meditation. But it's so important. You can live how long without food? You can live how long without water? You can live how long without oxygen? So now why do you think that may be the most essential thing? And delivered at a cellular level, it's part of the reason why chlorine dioxide solution or chlorine dioxide is so influential. And that, by the way, so just, you know, I love to give away information that people can use and utilize for free without, and I'll never sell chlorine dioxide. There are people in jail for educating on this and selling it. So I'm educating and not selling it, and other people can sell it and not educate. The reason why you could buy it is because it's a water purifier, but what we educate people on is just taking it's still a very low dose, but it's a higher dose than what you'd use to purify water. Right. Anyway, the reason why that's so powerful is because when you're drinking that throughout the day, you're delivering around 10,700,000 oxygen molecules for every red blood cell in the body. By the way, that's what Mel Gibson was talking about when he referred to his three friends that went into remission. I've got to be careful with what words, because these two things together don't go well on major platforms. That solution that I just talked about and the big C word, if that gets talked about, there is a reason for that, because it works and it is the biggest threat to the industry and it costs nothing. And you can look at books like Andreas Kalker's Forbidden Health, Achieved Health. That is basically the same book, but you can look for that. It gives you all the protocols. You can be done from home and you could use it for all types of diseases. And because it's an oxygen-based therapy, what disease should you not use oxygen for?
I'm laughing because 2002, and you know, the internet was very sparse back then, but I was doing what I could. I was in college and I wrote a paper and I still remember every last bit of it. And I'll tell you why and how it relates to what you're saying and why this is pertinent. So I did a study. I always, always, always have believed that God has put a cure for everything here. I fully believe that. I don't care what science, I don't care what textbook says. I don't give it. I don't care. I know in my heart, right? Mm-hmm. So I did this paper and I was looking at incurable diseases. So at the time, more prevalently discussed HIV, herpes, sexually transmitted disease. And I found this study in Germany. I don't know how I found it on the internet this time. I was very, very persistent in digging. And what I found was that they were treating it and smothering diseases with oxygen therapy. And it was killing them because they couldn't survive the amount of oxygen that was given to them. And this was like something that I dug and dug and dug and found. And I'm sure I have the paper somewhere in my storage when we just moved. But this was like 2002. And I wrote it. And I got a good grade on it back then because it, you know, it didn't matter back then to write that type of thing. Nobody was going to get that out. But I found it and it was oxygen therapy treatment and it crushed and killed the disease. And yet it's still, they want to sell you all of these drugs that'll mitigate and suppress suppressive therapy. So I can't remember. I think it's called valacyclovir or something like that, that will stop or mitigate herpes and I can't remember the exact name. I'm pretty sure that's what it is. And then the HIV drugs have changed, obviously, and there's different things now. But that's what I found, and that's why I was so fascinated with the oxygen side of things. And like you're talking about, that I don't know that those type of viruses can survive.
Exactly.
And instead, and as bad as this is, they'd rather not only put you on suppressive therapies that would make you miserable, but harm you in the process.
Wow.
Because a lot of these medications hurt you.
Wow.
They might help you in one way and hurt you 20 different other ways. I talk about this with stat
things,
and I will leave that alone because that makes me public enemy number one. But I'm a firm believer in that. So I see when you talk about red light that it kind of has that kind of effect where it's probably has the ability to cure a lot of things or at least help treat things that they may not love us talking about.
Got it right. Exactly. So we got to be careful in the platforms. You're right. So what I just did was to illustrate this, and I'll answer your question because I did kind of left you cliffhanger on that. So this has chlorine dioxide, which is not chlorine, by the way. It's just sodium and chlorite, sodium salt, chlorite salt, activated by hydrochloric acid, which your gut has. And it's a 25% concentration of sodium chloride, hence why it has this off-gassing potential with oxygen. So I'm going to ask your lovely bride here. Hey, Queenie, do you mind for a second? So she's going to take this outside for a second so it gets direct sunlight exposure. because it's contained here. But as soon as you see that fog up, let it fog up for a while. Like when I say a while, like a minute or two. And then if you don't mind coming back, he goes, okay, sorry to put your wife to work.
No, she's okay. She's fine.
Is that the, well, we'll get into, I want to talk about the protocol you put me on. Yeah. We'll leave that alone for now.
Oh,
that's a different topic that we'll talk about. So do you find it difficult or do you find it gratifying that you have answers? Or do you find it difficult to put them out there? Or do you take pride in that, in doing it, and how careful, because I know how careful I have to be, and sometimes I just don't give it.
Yeah.
Because we're at a point now where I think more people have now opened up to the fact that we don't have all the information we should have, or we maybe have gotten bad information, and we have a little bit more wiggle room to speak freely now than we ever have. It's still not great, but it's better than it was. Better than it was 3 or 4 years ago, I'll tell you that much right now.
Yeah.
Do you take pride in that? That you have those answers? Or do you think it's a curse to have those answers? I mean, because I think it feels good internally to know, but then it can be scary at the same time.
No, I appreciate you asking, man. It's a crown and a cross at the same time, because you have so much hope and joy in that. Like, for example, we're here and I know that I believe, and you'll have to see this real time, that what I share with you will actually help turn around that condition that could be a fatal condition. You heard me even like warning, but then in a gentle way, just being like, hey, it's actually really serious. And I'm not saying it's just this one way. There's a few therapies that will work with this, but it's so important to go after this. And hence why, and that was me seeking to drive into you some kind of compliance, right? Not that you weren't going to be, but it's just, you know, you got to give vision and direction. And now here's the hard part. What about all the guys that didn't get to have that conversation, didn't get to know that? What about when I didn't know about those things? What about all the people I buried when I didn't know about things that I wish weren't in the grave right now? And, you know, I believe I'll see them in heaven, but I would love to be with them now. And what about all the families? Like, I got a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old. What about all the families that don't get to have all those precious moments because their life is cut short? And so that's the hard part. So my responsibility, I feel like so responsible for being for being integrous with getting the message out and then doing it in the way that can reach the most amount of people. And it's part of the reason why, for example, when it was actually RFK Jr.'s doctor, Dr. Rashid Buttar, that gave me a call after 2 years of me going back and forth with him saying, I need to find out a way to help reverse this thing that people are putting in their bodies that is giving them this reaction because of this big scare that has happened. And then this is being mandated. And then some people thought it was a great idea. Other people felt forced, whatever. And now they're injured. And a lot of people died. And then these people that are injured, how do I help them, Rashid? And he said, there's no way to help them. It's genetic. And so you can't do anything about it. And I would just delete those sections out of the videos. I'd never air that section that he would say, because I'm like, you don't say, you know, you don't know that. And so I, once he called me and said, look, Jonathan, I've got an answer. It's urine. And I thought he was crazy, but I couldn't stop thinking about it. Because if it was true, it could help save a lot of lives because of the universal accessibility of it. What if it is a medicine? Okay, cool. Thank you so much. Right. Look at this. See that?
Well, yeah, I see it. It looks like smoke.
Yeah, that's oxygen.
Really?
So like you could sit in a hyperbaric and spend a bunch of money and sit in line and, or you could just drink oxygen all day. What do you think might be better?
I'm going to roll with the cheap mode and do the drinkable oxygen. That's probably better.
Yeah. Consistent. Like, yeah, it's like, imagine just been holding it for a long time. You're going to have consistent oxygen in the body. And then, but the cool thing about light, red light therapy, is that when it charges the cells, and so a mitochondria receive light, produce ATP, adenosine triphosphate, which is triphosphate, phosphorus. It's a fluorescent substance. That's the reason why there's so much phosphorus in urine.
Yeah.
Which means bringer of light. Your body is producing fluorescent substances. It's magical. It's amazing. But it stores that energy. And as it stores that energy, it's using it for all cellular function, everything. What do you mean? Like cellular repair, regeneration, stem cell reproduction, regeneration, stem cell maturation, mitochondria are in the stem cells. It's called the mitochondrial stem cell connection. Yeah. So you're charging those to go fulfill their destiny. Go, little guy, go come an eye cell. Go become a heart cell. And then what are cancer cells? The ones that just can't get there. I don't have what I need. You're a bad kid. You're never going to be anything. Well, you know, he stays stuck in this middle zone. So it's a cancer stem cell and it doesn't mature. And so what do they lack? Cancer cells lack energy. They lack cellular voltage. That's the number one.
Mm-hmm.
And they lack oxygen. And then there's antibody cytokines, there's hormones. They lack these things as well. And that's something called redifferentiation therapy. You're you're causing a cancer stem cell to form back into a stem cell, like to actually form back into a normal stem cell and then to become a regular healthy cell,
right,
a heart cell, which your body can naturally complete those processes, and hence why we look at regenerative therapies versus cut, burn, poison. Anyway, so to answer your other question, so the things to look for in a light device, number one is irradiance, the amount of power delivered. How much power is delivered and is it adequate? So that's, again, measured by milliwatts, typically milliwatts per centimeter squared at certain intervals, like 3 inches. So what we did with ours, we put them over 200, like 200 milliwatts per centimeter squared, which is super interesting considering like there are $150,000 devices that are at 50 milliwatts per centimeter squared. And I just think it's not that they were bad. It's just that they were good at a time, but technology evolved.
Yeah.
And then they kept the same process. Why change it? It's working. It's selling. Why change the model? Well, you should.
Yeah.
And because it's more affordable now, there's breakthroughs in technology and they cost nothing to run as well, because there's no, like there's really zero, or not zero, but very low energy consumption. The number one thing you're looking for is irradiance, the amount of power delivered. Number two is you're looking for wavelengths. So the certain wavelengths will go through to certain levels of the body.
Yeah.
So people know of infrared and they think of infrared and they think of a sauna and red light. It's the same. It's completely different. Infrared sauna is far infrared, which is great. The mitochondria don't see any of that light. Mm. It's going into the water. Your water is picking that up and it's raising the core body temperature. So then you can increase your immune system by doing that. And so it's a good therapy, but it does nothing in the mitochondria. But if you've got the optical window, which is 600 to 1100 nanometers, red would be around the 600s, 700s, and then by 800s and up, then now it's invisible, but it's near infrared. So it's still red, but it's near. And then once you get past 1100, it's mid and then goes into far into the thousands. But then everything in the 600s is getting through the dermis and just slightly towards the epidermis and then into the 800s, then it's getting the subcutaneous tissue and muscle, bone, interior tissues. So it will get near infrared up to 1100, will go straight into the bones. And so what we did was we just programmed it with all of these critical wavelengths. We put all nine. We went 480, 590, 630, 660, 670, 810, 830, 850, 1060. So we would cover these wavelengths. And it became really important as I went through the studies. I looked at a red light therapy study on breast cancer where they tested four different wavelengths. They tested 615, 630, 660, and 730. And so you would think, okay, well, they're very similar. Then maybe they're all going to perform similarly.
Yeah.
And that's what I would have thought.
Close enough, yeah.
There's only one that worked. It was 660.
Really?
And it dropped the breast tumor proliferation by 40%.
Why?
In 24 hours in both triple negative and non-triple negative breast cancer in PubMed, because it's that region in the body. And so it's like a bullseye, right? So if I wanted to get into your center of your eyeball, I couldn't do that with 670, even though it's proven for myopia and it's a 17% improvement in eyesight in 3 minutes. 3 minutes of exposure immediately observed a 17% improvement in eyesight. But if I was trying to get deeper into the eye, I'd have to use 810, 830, 850.
I see.
And if the disease was there, if I didn't use that right wavelength, I'd miss the target. I'd be like an archer that's shooting over it or under it. Yeah.
I get it.
Pretty great.
It's targeted. Yeah. Okay. All right. Cool. Man, that's impressive. All right. So good data. I appreciate that insight. Now, then let's kind of look at, well, one, I want to compare it to the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So when is the best time? I'm big on getting out early in the morning and the sun first thing in the morning for 20 minutes at least. For me personally, I feel that that's good. I've noticed the changes. When do we need the red light and how often do we need the red light therapy? And I understand that, like for me, you told me you need it more right now to treat this condition.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just talking about the average
in general
person. Let's leave conditions out because that's going to be all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
Just a normal daily
protocol. Yeah, exactly. So I would say, and you led with sun. So with sunlight exposure is amazing. In an ideal world, the best protocol would be one where you use both sunlight and like a red light therapy device.
That's what I'm talking. Yeah.
That's really cool. Not many people are talking about that. They're either kind of saying one or the other. And you're like, yeah, I didn't know about these devices. We should be the sunlight. And the other guys on the devices are like, afraid of the sun, use the device. And they're kind of shills because they like want to make people afraid of the sun, but it's all based on sunlight technology. So why would you say that? But I don't know if many people are saying that, but it's easy. Like, cause if you just want to do that in your marketing, you would just scare people off the sun. But, red. So like think about when the sun is red, it's twice a day. And this gives you indications on how much you can use the device and how little you can use it. So twice a day, you've got red in the sky, and it's red for, I don't know, we could Google it, like 30 minutes or something, 40 more, 45 minutes. Yeah, sunrise, sunset. So you see that red tint. So your body can like actually handle quite a lot. So you could do 30 minutes twice a day, 40 minutes twice a day. You could, but who has that time? Not everyone. And if you look at studies here, now let's go on the other side of the pendulum. A Birmingham University study studied 1 minute of exposure. And a lot of the fertility studies were even over the testicles for 1 minute. And you can look at all these really interesting 1 minute studies, which are profound. And that's the interesting thing as well. We have so much data on the devices, even though it doesn't tell you the brands in the studies. And there's a reason for that. It is giving you higher irradiance, much higher irradiance. And it's giving you that exact concentration. I'll give you an idea. Like I've got a device here and 90% of the power is going into the light and 10% is going into the heat.
Okay.
But you've been on it, you felt heat, right?
Yeah.
So what does that tell you for how much light is going in your body? When it only accounts for 10%.
Right.
You're sweating still, like depending on how close you are. And you don't have to sweat. It depends how close you are. If you're a foot away, you won't sweat at all.
Mm.
And you can be, and you'll get a great session still. But if you're 3 inches away, you're right up against it. And again, people are like freaking out, like, he's not doing it with goggles. Well, I've looked at the studies and my eyesight is, you know, perfect. But you know, do your own research if you want to feel comfortable and confident with that. You and I have talked about that. Birmingham University study showed a minute of exposure increased cell viability by 45%. So meaning the functioning of cells would increase by 45%. So why not just find that 1 minute or at least every 2 days? Because what would happen would be, like I cited a red light study that was twice a week, 20 minutes twice a week. So that's all that they gave up of their time. So don't be a perfectionist. And if you got 3 minutes, do it. And if you're like hardcore and you're, especially if it's in the morning, that eye study was eyes open. And then think about getting in your eyes and watch it charge your brain and what it does to your depression levels. The studies on depression were showing specifically that even after an hour of red light exposure, they had an improvement in their depression. And then an hour after that, then they had a more significant improvement. So it's stacking and it climbs. So it's you think that you're in front of this, it's treating you while it's in front of you. It's not.
Mm.
What it's doing is it's giving you, it's storing up the energy and it is helping you during it. But what it's doing is for the next 3 days, it's going to be releasing all the red light that you put into it, like what was produced by the red light that you put into it.
So let's just say you do it twice a day, like 5 minutes a day. It doesn't have to be all in one setting, right? To get the benefits of it. It's not like doing cardio where you want to build your endurance level, right? Okay. So feasibly you could do it. Is it fine to do it right out? Like, so let's say I go for my 20 minute walk in the morning. I get home, I come inside. Should I then flick it on and do a couple minutes then or wait a little bit? What do you think?
Totally, man. Do it whenever it works for you, whenever it feels good to like put it on.
And about sleep, does it help with sleep?
Amazing. And especially like the study specifically on that were to do it just before you went to bed, like maybe 30 minutes before 10. But you would like, for example, this has blue in it and I'll put that in there. It is there. I just put it on all settings. So that's 9 wavelengths. That's 480. And so blue is the best for skin rejuvenation and circadian rhythm, but still you don't do it at night because you have to replicate the sun. Sun is never blue during the night. It's red just before it goes. And then you could literally go to bed. Think about it right after the sun went down, which means you just saw red and then you went to bed. So that's what you're biologically designed for. But then you'll see blue once the day picks up. And so the sun is blue mostly during the day. That's why the sky is blue.
Okay. So what about the blue light glasses then that block this blue?
Yeah, dude, this is interesting. So
because you're saying turn down that blue and then other people are saying block it all day.
Exactly. So this is really interesting. So there is a myth to this. You like if all blue light was bad, then no one look at a rainbow. It'll hurt you, the blue.
Right.
Nobody gets sun during the day. And then there's this other thing of sunglasses during the day. Most of the biohackers will still say sunglasses aren't great for you because they're blocking your ability for your body to protect itself against, and you know, and for your eyes are like solar panels, so you're blocking that and they have well, they function and effect, et cetera. So it's the consistency. That's the thing. Okay, so if these lights, all these lights in this home, it's not your home. I mean, well,
studio.
It's your studio.
Yeah.
So I don't mind saying this. Probably all LEDs that have a high flicker rate.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And because of that, it's the damage. So imagine if I came in a room, I was flicking light on and off
just
constantly. It would damage your eyesight terribly, but you can't see that it's doing that, but it is. And so now it's blue as well. So now the flicker rate is getting the bad press for what the blue light has done. Well, the flicker rate is causing the harm. The blue light is not the thing that's causing the harm. But because of that, it is possible that these blue light blockers are still helping people because it's at least blocking the blue so that their high flicker rate that they're getting is at least being somewhat absorbed, or that the blue in the evening, even if it's non-flicker, it still might make people stay up because it's not in biology. Hence why you would take it out during the evenings, which I'm going to take out now.
I wore these blue light glasses from a very, very big name brand.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it just ruined my sleep for like 3 weeks to where I was sleeping 3 hours tops and I was waiting and I could not fall back asleep. I felt like I was doing dry. I don't know what it felt like. I mean, like stuff I hadn't even felt before. I could not go back to sleep. I fell asleep, but I was up. It was like 3-4 hours. And it took me like a month to get out of that funk.
Right.
Then I talked to another place that said, you don't block the blue light. You harmonize the blue light with these certain lenses and glasses. And then it was one thing and another. Then they got you wearing these red light things at night that seemed to screw me up and like that block everything at night, you know, and all of these different companies telling you this. I just said, man, I'm done with all of this.
Well,
I am done with all of it. I think that messing around too much with blocking too much of that, I think it would be better to just limit your screen time at night.
Yeah.
You know, or limit some of the things that you're doing. I mean, I work on a computer all day, so maybe there's some things I need to be careful with. Maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think when you start blocking things out and eliminating them, you're creating more problem.
Mm.
Would you agree?
Yeah. No, that's super interesting. It's like you proved my point, which is really cool that you're like, hold on a second, they're blue. Because this assumption that all blue light is bad is harming us. Because if you look at studies on 480, which is the peak of blue around there, they're actually even proven for neonatal care. So babies in the womb get a great response from blue light. It's the exact opposite of what you're saying. And these are clinical studies. And the fact that like they could even conduct a study on a baby in the womb, that they're kind of rare, these studies, because they don't want to do anything that will harm naturally.
You know, a lot of us, I do this, a lot of people do it, where it's like you hear one thing is bad and it's like you go completely overboard. Kind of like the cholesterol thing.
Yeah.
Where they want you to just crush your cholesterol. It's like, man, that's super harmful.
Yeah.
Like, okay, you don't want it crazy, but at the same hand, you don't want to completely eradicate it. It's like guys that use steroids and they crush their estrogen, you know, with estrogen blockers, and then they wonder why they're so messed up. And it goes hand in hand with everything. So I'm glad that you did that, because I wouldn't even have known it. We probably wouldn't even have talked about it.
Yeah.
And so, okay, you did that. What kind of settings are on this light and why?
Well, okay, so if you've got 9 wavelengths, you have the ability to change everything ideally, which is the case. Mm-hmm. And so you could take anything out or add anything, or with 9 being the most, then you could add any, but they are naturally all going to be there if like you hit a setting, which is like all, that's an example. Mm. And
so your light has 9 wavelengths. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'm sorry, just blasted you. Which you could do if you just, you know, if I didn't shock you so much, then you just like, and now you're adjusting to it. So now if I, and again, people do their own research, but if I hit something like settings here and I look at brightness, it'll give me the opportunity to look at all those wavelengths that I was talking about, which is from 480, 590. And these are like, they're very much skin related. And then 630 up, they're getting into deeper, but still going into the skin. So very effective for that. And then the 800s in the red and the infrared. But so I could dim everything, for example, and just take down and just say, look, it's just too much intensity for me or whatever. And so you can do that if you want. Or you could just go through and just say, hey, look, for whatever reason, I've read XYZ study and I just want to take out this wavelength, and you can. But there's really no need to do that unless you have some knowledge on that. And the only one I'm saying is the blue. So you would just select a mode that has that extracted from it, or individually take it out. And then outside of that, you can use some of the settings that relate to, for example, like ones that we programmed for pets and just, yeah. So we got a lot of pets that are having a good life. And
I've heard about
that. It's so cool, man, because a lot of people are like, they don't have enough money to be spending on every family member and every pet. And
yeah,
this is one Lord of the Rings, one ring to rule them all. And then everyone can do this, and then no reorder, right?
Right.
It's like, oh, they get the cartridges, fill them back up again. Like this air filter thing is costing me a lot every month or every year, but this is like a one and done. And so that's the other thing to look for. Like, like longevity. So 50,000 ready lifespan hours, FDA class 2 certified, 50,000 hours, 30 minutes a day. If one person is, it's over 200 years, that's unrealistic, but because there could be weather factors and things like that, but they're designed that way. Like LEDs are very durable if they're high quality, which is the thing, like no flicker. This is where Dr. Dan Pomper, he did extensive testing on our devices. He's like, bro, these are the best. And he did some videos for me, which is really cool.
I'm going out to film with him in November. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. He's great, man.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. And he had his EMF guy come in there and they go on the EMF devices, scoring, perfect zero. And so no EMFs coming out. That's the other thing. But
and you have instructions on the wavelengths for people then so they understand what they're doing or like,
Yes, it's in the book. And there is some really, yes. So there's an instruction manual. So it's there, right? So people can look at that stuff. And then, our team, we do like, there are lots of like webinars and we do lots of training and teaching.
Yeah, because I don't want people to feel scared or like, because we're talking sciencey and we're talking things and I want them to realize it's not difficult to use or easy if you just
turn this thing on. I even tell people, don't even set up the stand, just get it out of the box.
Don't overbank it, right?
Just plug it in and then just sit against it and just put it on you. Yeah. And it's so easy. And like, the only thing I'm saying is like, just think like, okay, well, maybe I don't need to get blue at night. So just hit a mode that doesn't have blue in it.
What's too much exposure? I don't want people going crazy. I've seen some people going, oh, I do this an hour a day. And I'm like, man, I don't know. That seems a little much.
Yeah, exactly. There's a time where it can work. But like, I haven't seen anything showing that an hour is too much. I haven't seen anything that it's harmful. And the sun is read that amount of time. But I don't like telling people that they need to do that because who has that time? Not everyone has that time. But look, if it works for you and you feel great on that, that's a good sign.
You think 20 minutes a day is a pretty good average?
It's amazing. Like, it's perfect. It's such a great amount of time. And then for me, sometimes I'll be like, I'll do an hour this day. And then like 3 days later, I'm back on it because I was traveling. And it's just so, think about it. You're like, how long do you put your phone in the charger? Well, the good thing is, you know that there's a certain amount and then it's charged. But if you didn't have a meter on it, you would kind of just charge it when you could because you'd just be like, look, I'll just.
Yeah.
And sometimes more can be better for certain things. And if you're way below the line, that you can have that benefit. But then on the other side, if you're close up against it, so have your testicles, and there's all these kinds of things to think about it very strategically. And then there's this methylene blue side of things where it's hypersensitizing your cells to light, which is why it's used in all these cancer studies because it's inducing the apoptosis. Light is going to do it in and of itself, like all the studies I mentioned that weren't including that. But when they combined that, it was so effective because it's hypersensitizing the cells to light, making them more sensitive. So methylene blue will have a peak absorption at 660 nanometers, which is interesting, same as the cancer study on breast cancer. And then funny enough, blue light activates curcumin.
Really?
So red and blue and red. Yeah, it's weird. I don't know, but it's rhythms in nature, man.
Let me ask you this. So I'm big on cellular health. I've talked to you about that and just learning. I've spent a lot of time now studying cellular health. Another thing that's kind of crazy right now is NAD levels. And then another thing I'm looking at or asking or thinking about is testosterone levels. Does the red light have any bearing or effect on NAD, on testosterone, or any other like area that we would see a benefit? Level wise internally before we talk about like other conditions and diseases, I'd like to.
So yeah, exactly. No, there are some great studies on testosterone with red light.
Cause I've heard about that, but I don't know. And I figured if anybody would know, you would.
And well, I hope so. So there's great studies on that. And then, and there's all these interesting crossovers. So if you think about something like, post stroke or, because there's people having massive recoveries post-stroke with red light therapy, or people using it for gut-related issues and having tremendous success. And so you just keep going, all these weird categories, and you're like, why is it working for this, this, and this, and this? So there is this thing where there's studies showing like a significant improvement in testosterone. I'm just pulling up some data on that so I can reference the studies. But because you have to think about, it's through cellular energy and it's through causing the mitochondria to generate energy. And then they're using that for all cellular functions. So the answer is always going to be like, yes, it's going to improve things, because how do cells do things? And they can do everything when they have voltage to do so. They can do nothing without it. Mm-hmm. Testosterone is a hormone. So like, think about the thyroid study I mentioned, where the thyroid is naturally producing LT4 by itself. without Synthroid because it had light to then stimulate the thyroid to produce thyroid hormones. And that's exactly what it did. It did two things. It stimulated the hormone to detoxify itself, which is so cool, a bromine, halogens, fluoride. And so it actually, that's what it did because it had the voltage, the cellular energy to go and perform the detox. There are no detox supplements. I have a supplement company, but we do detox supplements, but we don't detox. Supplements don't do that. They initiate the body's processes of it doing it itself. Light therapy is the number one, and it's also anti-parasitic, which is really cool. And an anti-venom therapy, considering, like, you know, some people are going to have to me, like, Ozempic is an issue. And so when people want to get off these things that are all made of synthetic venoms, they would want to use anti-venom therapies or things that work in a process of reducing inflammation. Glyphosate, the toxic ingredient Roundup, is synthetic animal venoms based on the patents of the world-leading patent holders. And so we want to get these out through these types of therapies. And then the net impact is once you remove toxins, then you'll get testosterone back. And that's one of the things. It's the toxic drive and it's the cellular function. That's the mechanism and the studies. Are really profound on
to re-stimulate production that's being locked down essentially because of the toxins in the body that are blocking the production from occurring.
Yeah. Okay. That's the big hitter.
Yep.
But not exclusively, because it would also be just it's helping the body generate it, the testosterone, just like the thyroid.
Okay. Or check this out. We're going to do a non-claim segment. I'm going to run down some things and you're going to say, yes, I've seen that. You know, I've witnessed it or heard of that helping this condition, or no, I haven't seen that yet, but I'll look into it.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Does that sound good?
Oh, dude, it's awesome. And should do I have to go off memory, or can I use these things?
You can look, dude. I'm curious.
I'll see if I can do it off memory, though.
I'm curious as to what you've observed, because we can't make claims.
Yeah.
Right? All I care about is observations that you've had, or things that you've heard, or from people that you've sold your red light to. From peers, whatever.
Yeah.
Just some things that you've seen it help with. And so and we'll get to inflammation last, because that kind of ties into my thing.
Yeah.
We'll save that for last. Yes. So the first thing that I would look at or imagine would be something like psoriasis or eczema being on the skin.
Yeah.
Anything you've noticed with
red? Yeah, amazing. Really, really good. And I'll give a cool cliffhanger that I've seen urine do amazing things for those types of things as well. And people, and on my own self, like really bad things. Right. This would be an example, right?
Well, because like psoriasis, it's a pitfall. Like, you just feel like it's endless.
Exactly. That's me with my leg and me putting urine directly into my leg.
Is that an injection?
Yep.
Holy. Is that just like an insulin injection?
Yeah.
Of your own urine?
Yeah.
Really?
Dude, I had that for 2 years and it wouldn't go away. You can see that closer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then immediately, no pain, no itch, gone. And then 3 days later,
that's sterile to do.
Yeah, because urine is sterile-like. It came from your body. Like, your kidneys filter 180 liters of blood per day.
Right.
And they pass through the kidneys. And then all that urine gets reabsorbed in the body. And then 1% of it goes through your bladder. And then you pee it out and you go, oh, look at this toxic stuff. But it went through the same filtration process. What happens when you put it back in? You're giving that information directly to that part of the body. Filled with the antibodies, filled with the urea, the urokinase, all the enzymes. They all break down all these things. Information back to the body that's missing, that only your body knows that it has. No functional medicine doctors and tests and all kinds of things that you may not be able to afford.
Wow.
But I had a way for everyone to get healing. And it's filled with stem cells based on the Wake Forest University study. 140 stem cells in a 24-hour urine sample, aged for 3 weeks, 100 million at a rate of 1 × 10^8. And part of the reason why I'm like, look, this is cool. Okay, so now eczema. So yes, amazing studies on and data and personal witnesses on everything from acne to eczema, psoriasis. And lupus, really great studies on lupus, even though that would be one that you would think that's a major problem. Rosacea.
Skin blotches, hypo or hyperpigmentation, anything. Because hypopigmentation, supposedly you can't fix. You just you have to lighten your skin to make it evened out, right?
Yeah.
Things like that.
Hyperpigmentation, particularly 590 wavelength, which this has. Is extremely good for hyperpigmentation. I should know because I've dealt with that. Dude, I mean, mine's the worst because of my Malaysian background. My mom, she's starting to do red light now. I need to check in with her, but she grew up with a lot of stuff like that. I'll see how she's doing actually with it. That's rosacea. But yeah, it helped me a lot. Like my marks were very strong, and you could see it in previous videos, all these like really strong. Right. But this is rosacea in a 21
year old. Yeah.
22 year old. That was over the course of 5 weeks. big reduction in rosacea.
People that have skin issues, skin disorders, definitely would want to look into this.
Yeah, that was a 68-year-old, this same time period, and so that was with rosacea, so it's pretty cool.
What about neurological, brain fog, lack of sharpness, mental clarity, any help there at all?
Profound. And that was one of the studies I'd shared with you from the European Society of Medicine, showing that all 62 of the participants had complete remission of all symptoms, which included brain fog, executive function, emotional deficits, I guess memory recall, all of those. And then, and that was specifically for the like long COVID, but those symptoms are in common. And so people experience the brain fog typically because of toxicity that's causing that. And that's why it's good to get off gluten and these things. But it's an example, or stick with the ancient grains, iron, corn, because of the hybridization, the leaky gut that's caused by that. So, but 60 out of 62 had that complete reversal of all symptoms within a single week, and the other two get better the following week. So it was 100% all got better in that 62-person study, particularly on brain fog, memory recall, executive function, and emotional deficit. So in the memory side of things, but then it was oxygen levels above 97% without supplementation, dysapnea, inability to maintain breath, all resolved. So that's really profound, because a lot of people have those, even though it's not diagnosed as that certain condition. But these symptoms are just symptoms. They're in common. They're 75,000 different diseases. There's not 75,000. There's one. And so it's all in common. That's all.
Okay. So, and I will preface this very loudly that these are not claims being made. These are observances or things that we've heard, right? So, okay. So let's talk about then one that would be an elephant in the room that you brought up earlier that you and I have talked about, that you're never supposed to talk about, and that would be cancer related.
Yeah.
Look, I've seen many different people that have gone far different routes than radiation chemotherapy. One, they had better outcomes. Two, they didn't get into a complete level of misery where they would rather be dead regardless. If that's what you're going to do, and I've seen it work. We've seen it work, but we've also seen it not work.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know success rate. I don't have numbers. I'm not that guy. I'm just curious, and I'm always looking for alternative methods or options of treatment.
Yeah.
Have you seen or witnessed anything that could potentially or shown to help either with therapy, treating it, putting it into remission, helping cure it, any of those things at all? Have you observed or seen anything?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll do the disclaimer on the word cure, so we'll throw that word out.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. And so your remission, yes, and a lot personally and in clinical studies. And so That's a beeper too, because it's designed in a way to help you make sure that you're not, you know, getting more than
right,
or that you know that you're doing because you've fallen asleep, or because you're so mellowed out because it felt good. But even though it's not dangerous, it's just, and safety time is a good, because like you got saunas that don't have time out,
yeah,
and they're high heat, so energy is the one thing, but house fires is a big risk,
right?
Because that's the, if you're not using LEDs, that's the thing to fall back on. But the irradiance is about maybe around 10 times less, maybe more, maybe less than that. So the irradiance, the amount of power delivered, hence why, because you got more of a delivery into the light. Okay, the reversal on that is about 90% into the heat, 10% in the light in an incandescent or halogen bulb. There's a big difference.
Mm.
Whereas 90% goes into the light in an LED. Hence why it replicates laser technology, because it's low and low flicker, no flicker. Okay, so here's an example. This was a that's a PubMed study.
Mm-hmm.
That's two sessions on a cutaneous B-cell lymphoma.
Oh.
Two sessions using something called photodynamic therapy, which is an example of that is if you combine methylene blue. In this case, they used a methyl form of aminoluvulinic acid, ALA. Okay, so there was three people in that clinical trial. It was just a pilot study. All three got better.
Wow.
Within 1 week.
Wow.
Dude. Like, look at this. All treated patients had complete remission, defined as a clinical and histologic complete absence of cutaneous B-cell lymphoma. After a maximum of two photodynamic therapy sessions at a one-week interval, no patient experienced particular side effects, and the pain was easily managed, as the pilot study from 2006. Three patients.
Amazing.
That's out. There's a breast cancer study. That was a 40% drop. And there's the four different wavelengths. There was a 40% drop in 24 hours after the exposure.
Well, nobody can say anything then, because there's studies out there that are documented. So that's up to you to look at and to decipher, but they are there. They're present. You've seen it. You've got the studies that you can show.
Lung cancer, biggest killer of all cancers, the 7% overall response, which doesn't, I'm not saying 80% went into remission.
Right.
It says that 87% had a significant response and improved patient quality of life. the promising anti-tumor strategy. This is PubMed.
And nobody's saying don't take your medicines or anything like that, but we're saying take a look at something else that maybe will help.
Yeah, exactly. This is where it's specifically showing that it gets straight into the bone.
Yep.
Near infrared will go into the bone. And it does this through, you'll see what I shared. It can increase the intracellular reactive oxygen species and the photothermal agent. And then this photothermal conversion leads to the tumoricidal effects, which is the suicide of the tumors. But that is the reactive oxygen species includes singlet oxygen. Singlet oxygen is red, fluorescent.
Right.
It's burning red. It's so powerful. It's been used in military settings to shoot missiles that are airborne. Singlet oxygen, your body produces it naturally. What do you think that does to cancer cells?
Eradicates.
Yes. Why it's so powerful. That's the prostate cancer study. That was the 400% increase. There you see the 49% in the VTP, which is the targeted photodynamic therapy, 13.5% in the control group. You know, UCLA, very promising therapy. These results are excellent news with men with early localized prostate cancer, offering a treatment that can kill cancer without removing or destroying the prostate.
Wow.
That's pretty nice.
Well, we got to wrap up here. So I want to close what we talked about with what I was talking about. So we'll talk about inflammation specifically, possibly to the heart from virus. It doesn't necessarily have to be COVID related. Any virus could cause inflammation around the heart. I've had COVID 7 times, like I've told you.
Wow.
No vaccine of any kind, but have had it. So we can't say it was vaccine caused, but we could certainly say it was COVID caused, where I had a episode where my heart, and we had gotten home from a convention, and I certainly was sick again. It seems like every time I go to these conventions, I come home with COVID or I'm sick. And I told my wife I got sick again, and she wasn't feeling good. The next morning when I was in the bathroom, my heart started to skip beats, but it wasn't like a normal one or two. It was about 15 minutes of inconsistencies. And I had to sit down, and I said, dude, this isn't a panic attack. This isn't a couple skip beats. Something's wrong. Went away after we sat and talked and it got calm. 2 days later, happened again. Third day it happened. On that Thursday, it was frequent all day long. And I finally said, okay, enough's enough. So I go in, low ejection fraction, which means that my heart isn't pumping as strong as it should be. It wasn't heart failure, but too low for me. EKG was a little abnormal. Echocardiogram showed cardiomegaly. So there was an enlargement of the heart. Not drastic, but enough to cause problems. Troponin level high, meaning my heart is sending out a signal that there's damage. They categorize that as like a silent heart attack type of thing with the level of troponin. So then, you know, it's my wife and my mom are coming up there, and they see that my heart rate's normal. Everything's normalizing the next couple of days, but they still go in because they have to stick the catheter up your arm to see if you got any blockages, to see that their assumption is you're going to need a stent. You got blockage. That's where you're having this issue. No blocking. That's when I talk to you.
Yeah.
And they are thinking it's either stress related, which very possibly could be with all the moving and all of this stuff going on, or more than likely it's going to be when there was a possibility of a blood clot breaking off and causing it, but not likely, especially because there was no evidence of anything in my lungs of any kind, you know, little bronchial inflammation, but that could have been from being sick. More than likely virus caused inflammation, pericarditis type of deal, right? I'm getting a cardiac MRI to determine that, but chances are that's what it is. So I talked to you, and you are so confident on use the red light, do this with the nicotine patches.
Yeah.
Talk about real quickly that protocol, how the red light could help, and why that protocol with the nicotine, which is scary to people, even though they don't realize that nicotine is not the problem with the cigarettes. It's the tobacco and the tar and all the other shit that goes into it. But explain real quick the reasoning and their relevance.
Yeah, dude, thank you for just giving me the opportunity, because in some ways it's a big part of my life's work, which is why you sense such utter confidence with me.
Yeah.
You'll notice I'm not confident about things I'm not confident about. No, I'm not, like, that's called assumptions. And it's like Peter saying, I won't deny you, Lord. And then he denies him.
Well, you just told me I guarantee it. And I'm like, dude, this is coming off your tongue way too easy, man. I'm going to try it because I trust what you're saying.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And things I said, like, I don't know exactly how long it's going to take. I don't know exactly which of these therapies is going to work more than the other. I know that they all work for it. And so you've got a couple of options. And so, and for everyone listening, that if you had a reaction after like getting something put in your body and you wish you didn't, you want to get it out, or you didn't have a reaction, you want to get it out. So either one of those, this is going to be super relevant, everything I say. If you have any mysterious symptom or challenge, this is going to be relevant for you. So that's what's really cool about this. Okay, so yeah, so the nicotine is very effective, and because of the fact that it's competing for the same receptor that is the target of the these viral components, and which is interesting. Do you know what the Latin word for virus is?
Mm-mm.
Venom.
Really? Makes sense.
Or poisonous secretion, but poisonous secretion is a venom. And so not saying that is exclusively then going to be from an animal, as we understand venoms, but it's viral myocarditis. And so now it's interesting because guess where you have nicotine receptors? In your heart,
right?
Brain, kidneys, intestines, ovaries, testes. So these are in these vital organs, and it's particularly the seventh receptor called the alpha-7 nicotinic acetylcholine receptor, which is in all animals and humans except badgers and mongoose.
Wow.
They don't have them. Well, notice what happens if they get bitten by a snake. Have you ever seen the videos? Honey badger don't give an F.
No, that's why.
Because they don't have nicotine receptors, so it doesn't affect them.
Oh.
It doesn't land. It's got nowhere to dock.
How cool is that, right?
Okay. They evolved out of having them, or adapted out of having them. So because they were in an environment where they kept getting killed by snakes, but that was their food. So everything is trying out adapt each other in nature. And then now some people think, what a great idea. Let's use it for pesticides. Let's use it for a weight loss drug like Ozempic and all these medications and other things that are getting put directly into the bloodstream. Then what a great idea. What could possibly go wrong? Oh, look, our cancer rates are the highest they've ever been in human history.
Mm.
Oh, I wonder why. Well, do you know what happens when you block these receptors? You dysregulate everything, especially your ability to circulate normal cells. So then form normal cells, hence why cancer is associated with studies done specifically on cobra toxins and cone snail venoms being injected. And then they'll actually observe the formation of tumors in short periods of time. And then in some of the same studies, they'll use nicotine as a control agent to put it in, and it will drop the tumor formation by more than 2 times in 72 hours. You can find that on PubMed. It's called alpha cobra toxin, alpha conotoxin promote the proliferation of glioma C6 cells. So you can look at that. Anyway, so by putting the nicotine in, you'll compete for this receptor. You'll drop it off the receptor. The nicotine will switch its place. Now it will be circulating. Now you might feel a little sick. And that's why a lot of people feel extra sick when they try nicotine if they're super toxic. Don't give up. Don't like underestimate your body's ability to heal and adapt. If you swallowed a poison, you'd want to vomit. That's normal. You just attach it off the receptor. So now it's as if you swallowed it. And it's often when people vomit or something after it, they feel immediately better. Not that you have to do it that way. It's better to just do it gently, small amounts, like 7 milligrams. Let's start with 3 and work up to 7, depending on your body weight and size. But generally speaking, that will still work well with people. If it's children, you could do a lot less, but you could do a single milligram or 2 as a patch, ideally, and let it release over 24 hours, switch it out every 24 hours, or do the gum in a similar fashion, maybe space it out 2 or 3 times in the day. But then you could break it down in the body with EDTA, it was developed during World War II. It breaks down the disulfide bonds of venom protein so they can't reattach. And so considering that it's all through our foods because of glyphosate and other chemical companies that are doing this is just something that people need. And notice that there's studies on nicotine turning around low hearing, Tourette syndrome, autism. When I say autism, specifically for aggression in both children and adults, schizophrenia, dementia, all with nicotine being therapeutic, Parkinson's disease, viral myocarditis with nicotine.
Yeah.
That's just a few. Protective against type 1 diabetes. If the rats are exposed to it, they don't get type 1 diabetes.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Isn't that cool? Okay, so that's one. Nicotine is going to be effective in that way. We talked about chlorine dioxide because of the oxygen.
Yeah.
And very effective. So you add that into the protocol. Look at those books like Forbidden Health, Achieved Health, and then add that to, basically speaking, I put 10 milliliters of the solution, or the equivalent of 10 drops of each of the solutions if you're not preparing the solution, into a liter of water. Activate it first, put in a liter of water. You can look up more on this. Drink that throughout the day. That is tremendous, and it can work in and of itself. The other one that can work in and of itself is the urine, which is surprising, but I've seen people with aggressive heart palpitations every day for 2 years after they, things that went in their body, and then within 24 hours, the moment that they drink the urine is the last moment they've ever had heart palpitations. They've never come back. I've seen those firsthand.
The red light,
right? And then the red light, because of how well it helps denature all these toxins and it helps to be able to give you this cellular energy, the voltage to be able to regenerate and heal. It is a killer protocol. And that specific protocol that I listed in that study was 4 sessions within a single week of 64 to 84 minute long sessions. And that was 100% remission. The inability to cure was 0.25%.
Wow.
But it was for nosophobia, which is the fear of getting diseases, and severe long COVID anxiety, which is based on people's fear, not the disease. So everyone got better.
Wow.
And so that's the power of red and near infrared light, specifically through LEDs in that study. So that's that.
Sweet, man. Well, I know we got to go. I know we're over on our time here. So, dude, amazing conversation. I want to just let everybody know that if you check the descriptions, I'm going to link all of your work. I'm going to leave a coupon code, which you were grateful to give to everybody. It's just Dylan. That's going to get you the discount on the red light,
yep.
Right? 10% off.
Yep.
So take advantage of that. We're going to do a part two, probably going to do a part three, and we're probably going to be doing a lot of stuff together, I hope. But dude, thank you for flying in. Thank you for all this time. Thank you for the education, and thank you for all that you do, bro. It is thoroughly appreciated. And I'm thankful to call you a friend. I'm glad I got connected with you. I don't remember which agent did it, but I gotta let them know later. Mike. It wasn't Mike. Okay. All right.
I feel the same way, and I gotta hit him up as well. That's awesome, bro.
All right.
And let's just quickly tell people as well, the place to go is myredlight.com.
Awesome.
Which is myredlight.com, and then yeah, use that code at checkout. You can look at stuff like we got stuff that just allows people to just get something really low cost, get it on their body, right?
So yeah.
Look at all these different things, very precision based things. And a full body panel, you look at those ones. This is my favorite. It's the one you got in your home, one I got in my home. So it's bigger than this, twice the size of this. Covers all your organs, like head to groin areas. So okay. It's an amazing thing, bro.
Appreciate the time, brother.
Appreciate you.
All right. All right, everybody. That wraps it up. Stay tuned for plenty more to come. Dylan Jamelli and Jonathan Otto signing off.